Express yourself. Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Oh my gosh, how is it? Time for Express Yourself again. But it is. Welcome back to another Friday afternoon full of creativity and wonder. I've got some exciting things lined up today. Interviews with local artist Hunter Hogan, who's got a solo painting exhibition at the Launch Pad. James Steinler's in the house, and he'll be talking with Aspen-based Hudson Reed Ensemble Theater Company about their web series premiere. And coming up first, though, is an interview with some live music and performers in the upcoming Garden Music Series, sponsored by Carbondale Arts. So stay tuned. They're doing it on the moon, y'all. In the jungle, too. Everybody on the floor, yeah. Jumping like a kangaroo. So let the horn do the thing they do, y'all. Well, you are listening to KD&K Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. The time is 4:02. Today on Express Yourself, I guess I already did that intro, but more about the Garden Music Series. Did you know that Carbondale Arts is hosting a monthly Garden Music Series this spring and summer with Minsa Wu and guests? Each of these four events in May, June, July, and August is designed to celebrate the rich diversity of artistic styles and cultural backgrounds, creating a different musical world each time. We've got Baroque to folk, minimalistic to classical, poetry to modern novella. And the first of these Garden Music Series is coming up next Thursday, May 27th, starting at 6 p.m. at the historic Thompson House here in Carbondale. And it's entitled Bach, Ballads, and Ballet, and is an exquisite collaboration of three extraordinary women artists, Alexandra Yurkinitsa and Natalie Spears, who are here in the studio with me. Hello.
Hey, hey.
Hello.
Thanks. Happy spring summer.
I know, and happy Friday.
Yahoo.
Are you doing good?
Yeah, thanks for having us, Brian.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Tell me more about your involvement in the first of the Garden Music Series.
This is Natalie speaking here. I am a folk artist. I play banjo in this production and I sing. And I was just so touched that Minsa invited me to participate. I think she was kind of banking on me bringing that folk element to this production. And it's just beautiful. I'm really excited about it. And it's been such a joy to work with Alexandra and Minsa in this setting, in this different medium. I'm so used to a certain type of performance style. And so to kind of dip more into the real performing arts element of it is exciting for me.
Mm-hmm. And this, Alexandra?
Hello.
Hi.
So this is an incredible experience, and I have always dreamed about collaborating with these lady artists. So thank you, Minsa, for the invitation. And the process has been amazing. And yeah, I will be representing the ballet portion of next Thursday's outdoor performance. So I will be in three of the pieces plus a very special story portion. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, some mainly classical ballet and a little bit of modern in some of the Bach music. So
okay.
Yeah.
Will you be performing like a dance solo kind
yes.
of thing?
Yes. Okay. So I will be dancing along with these beautiful artists.
Oh, my gosh. And that setting is so perfect out at Thompson House. I can't wait to hang out
yes.
on the lawn and take in some culture.
Yeah.
Do you know much about the ballad? It's the Bach ballads and ballet. So the ballad, I guess, is that you, Natalie?
The ballad is kind of representative of the folk genre. So we've got some old time music in there. Minsa really loves Irish music, so she came to me with the request that we play some Irish jigs and reels, which was really fun because that it's hard to do on clawhammer banjo. You know, there's traditionally in Irish music, you'll have a tenor banjo played with a pick. And so it's been really fun to kind of work out how these jigs fit on the banjo in the puzzle of clawhammer within the puzzle of clawhammer. Mm-hmm. So that is wonderful. You know, Minsa has a lot of that in her background, sort of the folk and jig stuff, and so that's been fun to collaborate with her about and been really challenging. I've been practicing nonstop since March, so I'm excited to kind of bring it into fruition. And I brought a couple songs to the table, and it's just so exciting to see the way your music can live in different contexts. Like, it's stuff that I've played in some of my own bands and own projects, and it's really fun to bring it to a new shared space, a new shared creative space. And I'm excited.
It's so fun to see how your music forms in different, you know, venues and you know, types of music. And what other kind of projects have you been working on? Is it all mostly banjo, or you're prolific in all kinds of?
Well, Lizzie and I released our album, so we've just been, you know, been gearing up to play a lot of shows again this summer. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a lot of kind of the old time influence of my music. But I also I've been trying to learn Manhaja Carnival on bass and play that and sing in Portuguese. So I'm just kind of all over the map in terms of what I love to study and practice. But it's, I'm just learning a lot about. This has kind of been a good excuse to learn more about classical music and just the emotion that's in it, and to watch how Alexandra like expresses that in her body is incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, this project has been so much about deep listening to me. Like, you always listen in music, but coming from such different cultural backgrounds, it really has invited me to listen more deeply as to what Mince's vision is, and when I can, when I'm not reading my music, to kind of watch what Alexandra's body is doing and how she's interpreting the movements, and how that, like, how, you know, the other day we were in practice and Minsa was like, let's make this adagio more spacious. And so it was helpful to me kind of to go back and watch the video footage of Alexandra and think about, like, what does that mean in Alexandra's body, and how can I create that more on the banjo, which is new, but I love.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That even makes me more excited for the possibilities. Yeah. The
goosebumps. Sorry, I just dumped. I went off.
Oh yeah. The possibility between the music and the performers and, just even the audience just being there to receive and participate. Alexandra, I think people might know you better from some of the flash mob things.
Yes, Bondo Flash Mob has been very busy lately, mm-hmm. and we continue to be. But yeah, so yeah, and Bondo Ballet and Bondo Flash Mob, you know, teaching dance classes, Pilates and yoga. And this particular project has been such a wonderful way to really kick off the summer, almost summer season. And within the show, I'll be dancing under the, there's a title portion here, Bach Partita, the Lore and the Minuet. And I studied briefly, like, the Baroque, like, traditional dances. I just quickly got online, like, what does this look like with a huge gown a very upright torso? And that's, excuse me, not really what Minsa wanted, but I wanted to get a sense of what that was. So there's a little footwork that shows a little of that, a little nuance. And then the Bach Adagio, one of my favorite pieces of music that Natalie was referring to as spacious. You'll hear it and you'll see it, I think, when you're out there for that particular part. It's just been wonderful to definitely get out of my traditional box of, you know, turning on a piece of music that I love and choreographing. And I get to do this live with these beautiful artists and out on the grass. I can't wait to try that next Wednesday at our dress rehearsal. I have no idea how that's going to affect my movement, but I'm ready for whatever. Wow. It's going to be amazing. I have a visual of how it's all going to look. It's going to be gorgeous.
Get to improvise with the elements on the day. We yeah, might have like 20 mile an hour winds yeah. on the day.
There may be
sheet music flying and tents flying. And so
May 27th.
It'll be dynamic. Be
like oh. Well, Natalie, I know you brought your banjo.
I did bring
and
banjo.
Hoping you'll play us a piece of music.
I'd be happy to.
Do you know what you're going to be playing?
Yeah, I think I'm going to play, I'm quoting this piece in the performance. And so I thought I would just play the whole thing. It's an old time tune called Say Darlin' Say. And, hold on, let me adjust this mic because it has a mind of its own and it's deciding that it's just going to migrate down. There we go.
I'm going to watch those mics over here.
All right, let's see. You stay. Okay. It's a piece that I've played before. It's called Say Darlin' Say. And, yeah, it's been fun to kind of stitch it into. Mince is going to play a jig after I do this, wow. So it'll be fun.
And for anyone that doesn't know Mince, and you probably do if you've been around town very much in the last year, she's a violinist. She's a classically trained violinist, but she's also a chameleon. She can play, like, the Irish jigs, like you're saying,
yeah.
So it's going to be a magical event.
She's a total sorceress, I've decided. Yeah. Watching her play violin is just incredible, and mm-hmm. her body is so in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just mesmerized. I had never really heard her play in, like, full expression until our dress rehearsal the other day. We just played, like, parts of stuff together, and just watching her play some of these Bach pieces, I was, like, my jaw was on the floor.
I can't wait.
I'm just going to check my tuning because it's warm in here and my banjo has probably decided to migrate a little bit.
I would love to show you a sample of some choreography, but I don't think that's going to be very possible.
You can do a play-by-play on the radio.
Yeah.
Aww.
And now she leaps.
Now I'm fleeing.
That's why people will be encouraged to go to the event
yes.
in person.
Here we go. Say, Darlin', Say. It's, like I said, an old traditional tune, and I've never been able to find a single author of this song. There's many different versions, and you might recognize some of the lyrics.
you, Natalie.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thanks, Brian.
That's just a little taste you're going to get if you attend the Garden Music Series. Again, both Natalie and Alexandra, as well as Minsa Wu, will perform at the first Garden Music Series event next Thursday, May 27th. You can learn more about the Garden Music Series and get tickets at carbondalearts.com. And there's even a season pass for all four events, May, June, July, and August. Thank you so much for being here. That's such a treat.
Thanks for having us, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Minsa's here with us in spirit.
Oh, she is.
She is. She's playing right now.
Uh-huh. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Coming up next, James Steinler is speaking with the Hudson Reeds Ensemble Theater Company. So don't touch that dial.
When I was younger. Okay, this is James Steinler with Express Yourself. What a great introduction we had and some great live music. Thank you so much. And thank you, Brian Colley, for conducting the interview. All right, Kent Reed should be on the phone. Are you there, Kent?
I am indeed, yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. It's so good to hear your voice. And I'm really excited to talk about your new series, Confluence, today.
Well, great. Awesome. I'm willing to talk about it, that's for sure.
Great. So wonderful. So first, for our listeners, Kent, can you tell me, you were with Hudson Reed Ensemble. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, I am. I'm director and founder of the Hudson Reed Ensemble. The Hudson Reed Ensemble got started in 2005 in Aspen, and we were in Aspen, a year-round theater company, and one of our flagship productions was the Free Shakespeare in the Park, which we performed in the Galena Plaza For free for the community for about 12, 13 years. And then fast forward to around 2019, the space we had had free to rehearse in, which was right adjacent to the Galena Plaza where we did Shakespeare, all of a sudden that got taken over by the Aspen Parking Department, so we were deprived of a rehearsal space.
Aye.
And then the Galena Plaza itself was closed off because of construction in New City Hall. So we moved down our theater company down to Basalt. And in the summer of 2019, we did our first Shakespeare in the Park down in Basalt. And I was concerned about how it would be received down here and how it would go. And it turned out that it was a really good success for us. And we were, even people came down from Aspen. Our audience down there came down to Basalt and, you know, from the Lower Valley, Glenwood and Carbondale, came to see our Shakespeare in the Park up here. So that was 2019. And then, of course, 2020, the epidemic hit, COVID.
Right.
We were not allowed to perform, and we just arrived in Basalt, and suddenly we were out. We were without any venue to do Shakespeare in the Park. So we decided that summer to do a film of our planned production of Macbeth, which we did. And it received something very close to 1,000 views. So we considered that a success, too. So
absolutely.
As we approach this summer, although restrictions are lifting, we were kind of hit with a conundrum because there's going to be a lot of people enter the valley from all different parts of the world. And we considered our position tenuous as to whether we could perform live or not. Although restrictions are lifting, we thought it's possible that they may be shut down real quick again by August if, you know, COVID started to gain ground here again. So rather than rehearse a show for a month and a half, a live show that could possibly be, you know, quarantined, we decided to, again, make a movie.
Yeah.
And play our cards close to the vest as far as this COVID business. So we decided that what we would do, we in Aspen, we were a year-round theater company. Down in Basalt, we don't have a year-round facility yet to perform in. Up in Aspen, we use the high school. And we are making tentative steps to approach the high school and middle school here to see if we could perform inside during the winter.
Oh, great.
But that unknown is still out there. And so what we decided to do was just do a series. Instead of a one-shot deal like a one-shot Macbeth, we decided to do an episodic web series. Then we came up with Confluence, which really the idea behind that was kind of an up valley, down valley confluence of different cultures, of different interests, of, you know, the whole schmear. So anyway, that's how Confluence came about, James.
That is so cool, Kent. And so Confluence, it's based on the valley?
It is. As with Shakespeare's Macbeth, which we filmed here in the valley at various locations. Yeah, Confluence is filmed here in the valley, of course. It's about, right now we have seven characters in our first episode, which we intend to expand as, you know, hopefully this franchise grows. But there are one guy's a veterinarian, a couple they own a polo farm. There's a bar owner. In fact, we shot a couple of scenes at Two Rivers Cafe in Basalt.
Yeah, I think and, I saw those photos.
Yeah. And Javier, the owner of the Two Rivers Cafe, has been very generous with us and accommodating. So we've shot there. We've shot in various homes around the valley and various outside locations also.
Very cool.
Yeah. So hopefully we pick characters that people will want to follow and have an interest in. We're new at this game, so, you know, it's not a Hollywood production by any means. However, we think it's sustainable, and as we go along, we learned a lot just from doing, Macbeth a year ago. Macbeth, however, was in black and white. We felt that medium or that color tone lend itself to Macbeth. Mm-hmm. This is in color, and it's original. Myself, along with a couple of other people, contributed to the writing of it. Graham Northrup actually wrote the whole thing. And so that's risky business, too. And we've learned a lot from, about the writing aspect, the photography aspect, sound aspect, acting. Most of our actors are stage people.
Right.
There, some folks will recognize some of these names, I'm sure. Are used to stage acting, and so we had to make an adjustment there. So it's very, very interesting and fascinating journey for our theater company to venture into a brand new medium and to refine it and to get better at it, as we hope to do in having a series. Will allow us to do that. Right now, we're tentatively planning on four episodes a year.
Okay, great. And so I'm just fascinated by the fact that it's a local, it's locally written, it's based on this valley and living in this valley. How many episodes have been filmed at this point?
One.
One episode, great. And how much time time did that take to film that episode?
It took us, I'm going to say off the top of my head, between 2 and 2.5 months.
Okay.
Now, that's the writing of it, that's the filming of it, and that's the editing of it. And the editing is a huge part of it, and Graham Northrup's our editor, as well as being our director of photography. So yeah, I'd say about 2.5 months. We originally conceived of this idea, in the winter, and then in fact a lot of this was shot in the winter. It wasn't a nice weather like it is now. A lot of it was shot, when it was cold outside in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are, as we speak, are writing the second episode. Actually, James, what we hope will happen here is that we'll have an episode a season. We've already done winter. Now we hope to do summer. We'll do fall. And probably next year when we get a leg up, we'll have a spring one. So we'll do spring, summer, fall, and winter episodes.
That really seems fitting because it kind of, in terms of how it's also perhaps relatable for folks in this valley, how we go through the seasons.
And well, that's exactly right. I mean, we want to capitalize on, the beauty of where we live and, just cycle through the seasons. And also, we'll see how this turns out. Like, it's all risky business. It's all, learning process. But we're also intrigued with the idea that, say, people tune in and they see episode one that occurred in the winter, and then they're going to see episode two, which occurs in the summer. Well, what happened to these characters in these 2 months that we haven't seen them. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So we pick up their lives 2 months after we first saw them. So whatever machinations these characters have gone through, we pick up on that 2 months later.
That's fantastic.
It'll be interesting because the characters as well as the audience will be in a different season, you know, in a different point and position in their lives and have had interactions with each other. The audience will discover after these, you know, when they see them again in 2 months.
Right, right. And when or where and when is the first episode available? Where can people find it?
It's available now, and it's available on our website, www.HudsonReedEnsemble.org. O-R-G.
Okay.
Or, you know, and people could just Google Hudson Reed Ensemble, and they'll get to our website through that.
Great, but the website...
Yeah, it's up there right now, and it's going to be up there forever, you know.
Fantastic.
If YouTube survives that long. Because actually, when they get on our website, they'll be directed to YouTube, and but it'll play right on our website. So anyway,
what is the cost?
It's up there now.
What's the cost to view it?
It's free.
Oh, really? Fantastic!
Yeah. I mean, right now, of course, we're looking for donations because we're a little bit in the hole producing this thing. Took a plunge, and so yeah, there's a donation button on our website also that if folks
care
to help out this project, it'd be great.
Absolutely. Well, and you're providing such valuable entertainment that is local and is really, you know, it sounds like can give TV networks a run for their money, and the fact that it's free is really, really amazing.
I don't know if it'll give TV networks a rent, but like I say, I don't want to. You know, it's a work in progress. But I'm proud of the people, and I'm proud of what we've done so far, and I'm optimistic and excited really about the episodes coming up and see where the lives these people live, our characters that is, how they're intertwined and what happens to them. Yeah.
Yeah, and how it will unfold their lives. Really cool. And again, just for the donations and for to view it again, that's HudsonReedEnsemble.org. O-R-G. Hudson.
Organization. Yeah, it's a nonprofit, you know, deal. Yeah.
Wonderful. Cool. And any silver linings? Because I know Hudson Reed Ensemble is, as you said, typically was a stage theater company. Have there been any silver linings in filming compared to stage theater?
Well, you know, I think there are. I think there's several. For one thing, we don't have to have a cast there, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week continuously for a month, month and a half, or 2 months to put a stage play up. This we can kind of do piecemeal. We can do a scene here. We can, you know, that only has 2 people. We can do a scene there. So as far as, you know, all of our folks, you know, either work or have families or whatever. So logistically, it works out actually better for us in the film genre than on the stage as far as trying to get people together to do a rather complex story.
Absolutely.
The other thing about film, and this for me personally, and I think for everybody involved, whether it's the photography, sound, it's just a whole new realm of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a different kind of acting. It's a you've got to be concerned about the sound quality. I mean, on stage, you know, it's usually projection or you have microphones, but we found quickly you know, sound is a big part of the film operation. Not to mention the photography, the videoing of the whole thing is a completely other technical aspect of it. So it's really been a fun and interesting and exciting medium to explore.
Absolutely. And it's so unique for our area for someone to be doing this. So I have to give you credit to just for taking that risk. Like you said, it is a risky business, but you've had some success with nearly 1,000 viewers for Macbeth. So congratulations. Unfortunately, my friend, we are going to have to end our call soon.
Okay.
Any final thoughts you'd like to give before we let you go?
Well, just that I hope people will tune in, and I hope they enjoy episode one, and that we presented enough of a story and characters that they will enjoy, that they'll look forward to episode two, which should be ready, I don't know, sometime in September probably.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, Kent Reed, thank you so much again. And for folks who are listening, HudsonReedEnsemble.org to view the first episode of Confluence, a locally written and produced TV or YouTube series. And so thank you, Kent. And again, Hudson Reed Ensemble can only make it with your donations. So HudsonReedEnsemble.org. Thank you again, Kent, for joining us.
Oh, you bet, James. And thank you so much. Good question.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was fun.
Will is so tall, and Avi so fair, and Dean is so beautiful, pretending.
Wow, thank you, James, for that great interview with the Hudson Reed Ensemble. It's so cool. There's so many things happening in this valley all the time, and it's just hard to keep track. This is Express Yourself, KD&K, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. It is 4:40, and I am now joined by another local artist, Hunter Hogan, who is joining me live in the studio. Hunter has a solo painting exhibition right now at the Carbondale Arts R2 Gallery inside the launch pad. It's called Transformation, and it is running through May 27th, so another week or so to go. Hi, Hunter.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming in today.
Oh,
I I'm excited to get to talk to you again. We had a great artist opening.
Thank you, Brian. We always have a good conversation, you and I.
Oh, thanks.
We do. I love to talk about paintings.
Yeah. And for anyone that hasn't seen the show, I wonder if you could kind of walk people through the room briefly. Just describe your style of work, the subject matter, and then we'll kind of dive into the process a little bit.
Okay. Well, the subject matter is all over the place, but as I used to paint landscapes, I think leaves and drawings of botanical things do creep in, even though that I think I'd rather be completely abstract, but it does look like a garden in there. I don't really know how that happened, except for that for 13 months, starting in March a year ago, I did nothing but paint and go for walks. And I have this process, which, of course, is you were going to talk about that in a minute, but it's integral to what I'm talking about, because I learned this at Anderson Ranch with Roberto Juarez, who I've been to workshops with several times. And I cut up magazines, literally just shapes, not always a picture of something, very rarely, although plants and windows and chair legs creep in a lot. And I just rearrange these and make little studies. I do lots of them. And to me, I can just see a painting sitting there when they work, and I've got a color direction and I've got a structure direction. I just want to paint, but there's quite a bit left to be figured out as I paint, because how you paint is how it all goes together.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives me a confidence start for a good sized painting.
I think that's a great actually advice for people who are maybe afraid of painting, especially large, because most of your pieces in there are over 50 inches by 50 inches. So. The cutout magazines can kind of give people an idea, especially for like composition and stuff like that.
Most of the time, they really do work. Once in a while, it is a total disaster.
Hmm.
And that just happens, you know, with all paintings.
Yep,
it's always structure or color, one or the other. Hmm. Something is off.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, it's just a great way to start. And then if I want to take off and edit out things or add in things, I've got a really good thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a blast. And as I told you, I had switched from oil painting to acrylics.
Right.
And I did that because I've been living outside of the United States for 3 months of the winter. In Nicaragua, and it just was too hard to try and drag oil paints around and work in a house, and it's too hot to work outside. And it just, switching to acrylics made sense, and I didn't quite understand how to get my effects at first. But now, and I've been told by some very good artists, one of which was Wendy White from New York, and she said, "You've made your acrylics look like oils." Now, whether that's true to everybody's eye, I don't know, but I'm keeping a lot of transparency with them, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
I like all that, seeing some of the white of the canvas come through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can see that with the painterly kind of brushstrokes that you use all over the canvas, and you kind of gave me some hints about how you do it, but I can see why people think it's more oil painting than acrylic.
That's Monday night.
That's true. Yeah, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, Monday night, I had an idea that some people can't get in between 10 and 5, which, mm-hmm. because R2 is having reduced gallery hours still.
I know.
Unfortunately.
And weekdays, too.
But I thought maybe we could have a little get-together at the gallery at 5:30. If a few people want to come down, if you're interested in painting, if you're interested in seeing my paintings, it doesn't have to be, it can be about painting in general, but I would love to have people talk about painting or ask questions, or when people ask things, then a dialogue will ensue. And I think it would be fun, hopefully.
Yeah, we've got pre-registration signups going on right now on our website. And it is this coming Monday. What is that? May 25th, I think.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, at 5:30, and we'll hang out in the gallery with Hunter and her work,
and talk about how paintings happen, how my paintings happen, and Anyway, my show is called Transformation, and that's really two levels of meaning for that. One, I'm taking somebody else's ideas, the magazines, and I always use design magazines because I like the color. Mm-hmm. I like the color harmony in them, and the ads especially. And and I cut them up and just totally make them my idea. And then also by doing this, I have found my way through because I was living in Niwot outside of Boulder, a quaint little town, and working in my quaint little basement. And I just really got into a corner. And I, with my oil paintings, doing big oil paintings, I felt really stuck. And switching to the acrylics and really learning how to translate these little studies changed everything.
Wow. And if you do get a chance to visit, you do have three studies available for viewing.
I did put a few of those up.
And I think it's such a great game. We've also had a bunch of kids come through and notice those, like, first off. And so I've mentioned, you know, these three studies are also paintings in this gallery, and it's fun to try and match them up.
Well, I'm always struck by how many people tell me they want to paint. Some people want to do other things, but really, I think an awful lot of people want to do something visual. Mm-hmm. And painting is intimidating to start. I think that just learning, going to a really easy class, and well, everybody's nice, and that's fine. But the moment you get past that level, it gets a lot more intimidating, and criticism is a lot harder, and there's so much to learn. It's just a never-ending lifetime of experience to really work at painting and be a painter. That is not a complaint at all. I can't think of anything that's more interesting to me than looking at paintings. It's the first thing I see if I go to someone's house. It's the first thing I notice is if they have something interesting on the wall. Mm-hmm. And I always comment. And then if I go back a year later, I notice if they have new ones. Mm-hmm. People are always surprised by that. And I just love looking at paintings. And because of having a South African husband, we've traveled a lot. And he had a business in Aspen for 26 years. And during the off season in those days, we just closed up and went to Africa. And I love looking at paintings wherever I am. I love third world art. My favorite painting in my house, I bought on the beach in Jamaica for $25 30 years ago. And it's a funky painting, and I just love it. I've looked at it for all these years, tried to understand how they did it.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the magic of the art world.
There is magic in art, and especially for me, I think painting, because I was a tapestry weaver, and I showed in the valley. I was here through the 90s and from 1985, and tapestry has very definite constraints. You're working on a vertical and a horizontal loom. Everything is, and usually tapestries are woven sideways because the colors mix better.
Right.
And I was working on fairly large pieces, like 5 by 7 feet. And it would take a couple of months, and you can't undo anything. You can't change anything. And I was just completely frustrated and burnt out with that. Huh. And my husband said, well, you don't have to do it. And I thought, well, that's actually a good consideration that maybe I don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I ever wanted to do in my whole life was paint. So I finally jumped off that bridge and started painting. And, of course, I made horrible-looking paintings for a long time.
So. That's part of your transformation then.
It's only been 32 years, but, you know, and hopefully I have another at least good 10 years of painting. Hopefully I'll live longer than that, but we'll see. I don't ever see not painting.
That's the whole joy of the art. The just being an artist, though, is it's like a lifetime of practice and learning and experience. And
I don't know where the drive comes from. And as I said, most people want to do something, but some of us just really don't ever give up the idea and don't ever give up the pursuit of trying to make something that looks nice. And and quickly, I'll just say again, the collages are a magnificent way for experimenting and learning about color and how things go together. How things go together is huge. And you learn a lot. And all you need is a glue stick and some magazines to cut up. And it's very easy.
And maybe a design magazine. because that sounds like the trick there for you. Not just any magazine, but a good, like,
well,
design magazine.
I love looking at design magazines, and I love looking at beautiful interiors and beautiful yards, and it's just a natural thing. I mean, I couldn't see myself wanting to make ones out of comic books, but I do know an artist who had a wonderful gallery in Aspen, and he's in Santa Fe now, Tom Tavelli, and he's making these amazing papier-mâché sculptures, and they look very much like... you know, graphic cartoon kind of characters and things on them, but they're gorgeous looking.
Holy smokes. Wow. And again, this coming Monday,
yes.
I wonder if maybe you'll bring some of the magazines to show.
I'm going to bring a few things.
Oh, definitely. Okay, great.
To show some of my, how I get some of my things working.
Yeah. I love walking into that room, though, in the gallery. I just feel like I'm inside of a greenhouse or...
Yeah.
yeah, just a great, amazing feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crowded in there, but it is my last year's work. And I love seeing it. I really do. And I love the gallery. I mean, really, it is amazing for a small town like this to have such a good facility.
Yeah.
And I just hope everyone goes to see every single show there. I do.
Oh,
I mean, I just, even the things I'm not that interested in, it's worth seeing because it's professionally presented. And
you
guys put a lot of energy into it.
Thank you, Hunter. And your show, Transformation, is up through next Thursday, May 27th. And the launch pad is open weekdays 10 to 5. But if you're lucky, you can sign up at carbondelarts.com for the Monday after, well, evening talk.
Soiree.
At 5:30. We'll be inside the gallery and looking at Hunter's work. Hunter will be there, and we'll get to have a good art chat, which will be amazing because we haven't really gotten to do that in a while. So.
Okay, well.
Thank you so much, Hunter.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for being here. It's really a pleasure to see you again.
Here's a program from our archives. This week, villagers in northern Greece are celebrating St. Constantine's Day in a ceremony that climaxes with revelers dancing barefoot across a bed of hot coals. They carry relics sacred to St. Constantine, and it's said that these holy items protect them from the flames. But is there also a scientific explanation for this phenomenon? I'm Jim Metzner, and this is the Pulse of the Planet. Dr. Kenneth Kilstrom is a professor of physics at Westman College, who's been known to walk across coals himself as a demonstration to his students. He's told us that, aside from faith, St. Constantine's followers have several physical principles protecting the soles of their feet.
There are basically three reasons why it works. The first is heat capacity. If you're baking bread in an oven, if you put your hand in the oven and just touch the air, you don't get burned. If you touch the bread, it feels warmer. But if you touch the side wall of the oven, you burn yourself badly. The difference is that the wall of the oven has a much higher heat capacity than either the bread or the air. And so the first thing that helps is that the coals have a relatively low heat capacity. The second issue is thermal contact, that when you walk on the coals, there's usually a little bit of a layer of ash on them. Basically, the heat doesn't transfer very efficiently from the coals to your feet. You do not want to camp out on the coals. And so generally, you walk reasonably briskly across because the coals are hot. And given enough time, even with the poor thermal contact, the lower heat capacity, eventually it will burn your feet. And it doesn't take that terribly long.
Whether you're carrying icons or a physics textbook under your arm, firewalking is not recommended as a casual pastime. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is the Pulse of the Planet.
Good afternoon. It is 4:59 just about now, and you're listening to KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. Rockfall mitigation work on Highway 33 lasts through October. Drivers can expect alternating single-lane traffic from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mondays through Fridays near mile marker 52. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. Stay tuned for NPR's All Things Considered and KDNK local news coming up at 5:34, and maybe some weather thrown into the news hour. Then, stay tuned for national native news and travel with Rick Steves. Thanks for keeping it here on KDNK.
I see.